The Data Reaper podcast is a companion which provides extra insight into the weekly report found at viciousyndicate.com. Join us for a deeper dive into the numbers to help you improve your Hearthstone game.
Hello and welcome to episode 129 of the Data Reaper podcast. I'm your host, Ridiculous Hat, and I am joined by my buddy, Zacho. How you doing, Zach?
I'm doing good. How you doing, Hat?
It's a weird weekend, man. I am in job limbo. I'm currently technically unemployed, though I start on Monday. And this is the last of my regular podcasts that I will be recording. After this, I'm a free agent. So, very strange, but I am glad to be here with you and talk through the data one more time. Already feels comfy.
Yep. I made sure to say, how you doing, Hat?
Very important.
In the best way possible, because it's the last time I will say that. In a while.
We'll see what happens.
So, yeah, we'll see what happens.
See, you've developed your podcast skills. High skill cap. High skill cap.
Yep.
And let me run through. Hold on. Let me see. Okay, I've got one more meme. I just want to run this one back. I just got to share this one with everybody. I got to run this back.
And as usual, you know, my opinion is always based...
What an absolute classic.
This is the Giga Chad meme, right?
It is. It's the Giga Chad meme. I also have the Made of Pea song, but that's a minute and a half. Maybe I'll throw that at the end.
So we had the first report after the balance patch. A lot of things are going on. Lots of things to talk about.
Wait, hold on. Let me do some housekeeping real quick first.
Yeah. Housekeeping is pretty important. Go ahead.
All right. So, report Thursday the 11th. The plan is for Zach and the new host to do an episode the weekend after. However, listeners, you were kind and understanding. You recognize that transition period, sometimes there's some ups and downs. We'll see what happens. The goal is to get you a new episode with a new host as close to on time as possible. But we're gonna see just how that goes. But Zach has someone picked out that has worked with Vicious Syndicate before, and I imagine that it'll be a really fun listen.
Yeah, I think it will be fine. But I don't want to put pressure on the new guy to, you know, get things on time, because this podcast is basically Hat's podcast. He's the one who does the editing. He's the one who does the, like, takes care of all the recording and the publishing. I'm just here to talk. I just hear you to yap. I don't do anything here other than yapping. Unlike the report itself, where I do the article and I work on it extensively, the podcast is Hat's thing. So replacing Hat is very difficult in the sense of, like, all the technicalities and, you know, the recording, and they need to be on the ball. So hopefully we'll get it on time. Hat has been very helpful in the transition, has been helping the new guy acclimatize and understand what the role is. But I want to put pressure and expectations. So I'm hoping that there will be a podcast in the same time next week. But if there isn't, then my apologies. Be patient with us.
Why are you apologizing? Isn't it my fault?
No, it's not your fault, dude. You're going to Team 5. This is fantastic.
I'm not sorry.
Yeah.
But it is my fault.
Then, you know, it's kind of hard saying that your fault. It's not your fault. It's a consequence of you winning at life. So you don't need to apologize for that.
I'm not gonna. Don't worry.
Okay.
You can blame me. I won't be here. You can do whatever you want.
Okay.
It's up to you.
I can blame you for all of the meta's illnesses once you're in Team 5, even though you have nothing to do with it. I will still blame you.
I'm looking forward to that. Please do that. I've already been called a shill, so please blame me for whatever you possibly
Everyone
can.
Everyone who has ever called you a shill, Hat, is absolutely right. The proof is in the pudding.
The proof is in the paycheck.
Yes, exactly. You are going to get paychecks from Blizzard. Is there a bigger shill than that?
It literally not possible. Yeah. All right, so... Well, you have to give me one last scoop of the live data that I get to hear before anybody else. So let's talk about the meta. Most popular class, number one in the report, Death Knight. Tell me what's going on with Death Knight.
Yeah, so You guys may have already known this, but you know, there was a patch came out. Day after the patch, everybody felt that nothing changed. People complained that the Death Knight nerfs were not good enough. I looked at the data 2 days in and I said, guys, let's chill. There are definitely changes happening. And I think it's definitely reflected in the report that you're seeing. There are some dramatic changes at Death Knight. So the first thing on the climb to Legend, outside of Legend, where the meta, you know, is more in, you know, baby steps, still developing, lots of bad decks still appearing. Death Knight appears to be very powerful still with Frost and Blood. However, win rates of Frost Death Knight across the board declined by at least 2%. Win rates of Blood Control Death Knight declined by 3% in the average common meta matchup. This is something that I specified in the report, something I noticed fairly early on in the patch, and it's reflected. Like, Death Knight is still strong on the climb, but not as strong, and this win rate continues to decline. Like, Frost and Blood continue to get worse. At top Legend, where the meta is most advanced in its development, things are more dramatic. The appearance of Spell Demon Hunter has completely crippled Frost Death Knight, and it is now a tier 3 deck at high MMR brackets, and depending on how much spell DH trickles down to the rest of ladder, it could hurt Frost Death Knight's win rate throughout ladder. As of the last couple of days since the report came out, Frost's win rate across the board throughout ladder, it continues to decline. It might start hitting tier 2 range at some maybe upper diamond around that mark. Really, it depends on how many Spell Demon Hunters take, how much that deck takes over, how much it trickles down. But regardless, Frost Death Knight is not expected to be a top 5 deck at any rank bracket above Platinum. So that's a dramatic change compared to the tier S deck that it was before the patch. In addition to that, Blood is still a good deck, but obviously it is weaker and not as powerful as it was before the patch on the climb. At top Legend, its win rate is actually maintained. And the reason is because it has a good matchup against Spell Demon Hunter. So, which would otherwise, like, if Spell Demon Hunter did not pop up, Blood Control would be deep tier 3, possibly bordering on tier 4 range. But because of the rise of Spell Demon Hunter, it kind of helped Blood to stay relevant. And it remains like around tier 2-ish, around the 50% win rate mark. I expect it to hover around 50% above and below over the next week or so. So that's a big change. However, the deck that seems to benefit from that is the third Death Knight deck that people have underestimated over the last week, but now it's beginning to pop up and show more play rate, is Unholy Death Knight. And Unholy Death Knight is primed to take over. I don't know if takeover is the right word, but it's primed to be the best performing Death Knight deck across all ladder brackets. It is a tier 1 deck at the moment. It is the best deck at top Legend at the moment. It is a deck that is able to, I think the key for success for an aggressive deck in the current format is to be able to beat Zhokdruid, but also have a good enough matchup against Spell Demon Hunter. And Unholy Death Knight accomplishes that. It's actually, it may be slightly favored against Spell Demon Hunter. So if you stomp Zhokdruids and you beat Spell Demon Hunter, then you, it's a recipe for success at a high MMR format, which is why it's by far the best performant there. Even though most players, you know, the perception is that Spell Demon Hunter at higher MMR is the best deck, Unholy is actually outperforming it at that bracket. So Unholy is very good. When it comes to builds, nothing really changed with Frost or Blood. Like, the balance changes didn't make them want to change card choices. When it comes to Unholy Death Knight, though, we made a tweak. We took out the Rowdy Fan. Rowdy Fan now at Unholy looks pretty bad. It's still okay. It's still good enough in Frost, but Unholy really does not want to run Rowdy Fan anymore. I'm aware of the Wuling build, and the Wuling build seems to perform well, but the reason why the Wuling build performs well is because Unholy Death Knight performs well, and that list cuts a Rowdy Fan. The Murloc package is not actually very impressive. It doesn't actually perform particularly well. So instead of Gorlock Ravager, we're running Famish Fool, which gives you card draw. In addition to that, you have the Astalor still there and the Pozic. You're adding Pozic. Pozic seems like a decent card in Unholy, which is not a big surprise considering that it's really good in Frost. So it makes sense that an aggressive Death Knight deck would want to run that.
And also, it's worth noting, Wuling, I love you. Don't cut Blight Fang, please. Don't do that. Can't do that.
Oh, I actually forgot that. That he actually cut Blightfang. That's kind of... No, you don't do that. So, yeah, it just... Like, Unholy is just very good. Like, if you take it to ladder right now, you're going to have a lot of fun winning games because it's kind of bonkers. And it obviously benefited from the fact that Frost and Blood are weaker than they were before because those are the main counters. That alongside Control Priest. That's pretty much it. I think those are the decks that have reliable favored matchups against Unholy. Otherwise, it's a coin flip at best. Very impressive deck with a very good matchup spread. It also tells you that if Team 5 nerfed Blood and Frost harder, then Unholy would be out of control. So in that sense, as time goes on, I think Team 5 are vindicated and are proven to be correct in their decision to lightly nerf Blood and Frost. The nerfs were effective. They made an impact. They changed the format. But they didn't let other decks that Frost and Blood checks spin out of control. And Unholy Death Knight is not the only deck that may have exploded if Frost and Blood were crippled by balance changes. So I think the balance changes were very responsible and were very good. And this is why I defended them before. So that's the current situation. And I think Death Knight, I think they were successful in making Death Knight relevant, but not overly powerful. I don't think that Unholy Death Knight is dangerous because I do think that a lot of decks, even the decks that currently don't beat Unholy because it's so underplayed, we'll see how much that changes. A lot of decks, even in this report, we're telling you to cut AoE. We're cutting AoE until things are proven differently, right? We're cutting AoE until Unholy maybe goes to a 15% play rate. And then we might think about adding it back because at the moment AoE effects are a liability because they're not useful against Druid at all. They're not useful against Spell Demon Hunter. They're not useful against Miracle Rogue. There are a lot of decks where AoE just does nothing. And even though there are some good AoE effects, they look like traps. And we'll talk about the next class, which is Demon Hunter.
Oh, you're talking about Imaura.
Yeah, which has a very good AoE effect in Immolation Aura, but the card is terrible at the moment. It's basically, the card is almost as bad as Fizzle in terms of impact in the current format because people don't play a lot of board floating decks. But again, we'll see how much that changes with Unholy rising in play. We'll see the extent of how much that deck rises in play. And if people run AoE again, then Unholy, I expect that win rate to drop to some degree. But it's still going to be very powerful. So looking at Demon Hunter. Demon Hunter has a lot of decks. And yeah, the portrait is the same, but those are very different decks. I really wish that other classes had the amount of options and the amount of diversity that Demon Hunter is displaying. And Death Knight to some degree. Those classes... just like they're really cool. I think they're well designed, except for Sinful Brand because screw that card.
But still, they do a lot of stuff, and the stuff is like there's some commonality, as we've discussed before. Sithino Predation and Unleash Fel and Felerin the Forgotten, which everyone remembered him now. He's in a lot of decks, but yeah. these are packages or cards or whatever, but still, the four different Demon Hunter decks, Outcast, Relic, Big, and Spell, they play meaningfully differently. They have meaningfully different matchup spreads.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's kind of similar with, I don't know, Rogue decks that run Preparation. Preparation is a common card, but it's not indicative of the strategy because Big Demon Hunter is dramatically different from Outcast. These are completely different decks. You can't say that because they run Sithino Predation... then they're the same decks. And there is some interesting Sithino developments in at least two archetypes that are flirting, I would say, with even cutting the Sithino package. So that's kind of cool. That shows you that it's not like complete flex tape situation where you just mindlessly throwing Cetino into everything. There are actually decisions to be made. So let's talk about it. First, let's talk about Spell Demon Hunter, because this is the deck that I think is one of the biggest threats to... It's the biggest threat to the meta's health in the format. Like, if there's any deck that I would say is kind of dangerous in the sense where it warps the format into a direction that is a bit sussy, and the play experience is very bad playing against it constantly because of the fact that it punishes you for going wide and it punishes you for going tall. It almost like you can't play minions against it. And in many matchups, the correct thing to do against Spell DH, like in the sustained matchups and the decks that counter Spell DH, sometimes just don't play stuff. They just don't play Hearthstone. And they just sit there just to prevent being branded. That's, for me, is just unintuitive. It's like cards that do that, that cause you not to play the game as a correct line of Hearthstone, just seems wrong. So I fully expect Brand to be addressed in the next patch. I think it's more likely to be addressed compared to Unleash Fell and Arcanist combo.
Because no one plays it except in decks that shut down your opponent's ability to do anything.
It's only seen
play as a really, really like warping card. Whereas these other things, these other strategies, there's kind of some push and pull to them. There's some, you can build strategies around them, but they don't like just shut down the ability to win the game. Brand does the thing that we've said many times, always gets nerfed. They punish your opponent for playing Hearthstone. So they're going to make that not a thing.
Yeah. So in the current situation, Spell Demon Hunter, like the good thing about Spell Demon Hunter's current situation, and I'm more encouraged about it compared to before, is that I'm seeing more counters to the deck or more decks that are able to contest it beyond the Blood Control Death Knight, which can out-sustain it, and the Zhokdruids, which can also out-sustain it by running Chitinous Plating and sometimes Beetlemancy inside an ETC. Those things are very helpful. So you can out-armor or life gain, excessive life gain does counter Spell DH, but you're seeing other counters. Spooky Mage is showing potential to be able to counter Spell Demon Hunter. In addition, you've got Mech Paladin. We'll talk about that later. There are other decks that are showing the capability. Face Hunter shows the capability to challenge it. Unholy Death Knight might have an edge against it. So it's not just excessive life gain, but there are decks that are able to attack it better, which encourages me and tells me that this deck is not going to be tier S out of control. It's just going to be unpleasant and popular, but not unbeatable. So that's the encouraging thing I see. When it comes to the build, Feast of Souls is, I think, is a waste of a slot. A lot of people going one-on-one with Chaos Strike and Feast of Soul, just run two Chaos Strikes. It's damage. It's unconditional draw. You already have a lot of bulk draw in the deck. You don't need Feast of Souls. I think it makes more sense to just drop Feast because it's very, very situational. But otherwise, the build is very refined. There's not much room to improve there. So hopefully other decks catch up and are able to contest it better. It's still going to be a powerful deck because of the way that it punishes you for playing Hearthstone. But it's thankfully, there are enough things that kind of can deal with it. We'll talk about those in more depth as we go through the classes and why they can challenge Spell DH. Another deck to keep in mind is Outcast DH. This is a deck that I'm pretty sure if Blood and Frost were nerfed harder, this deck would be out of control. And pretty much the only reason currently that it's not out of control is the fact that Blood and Frost are still viable and Spell Demon popped up, and Spell Demon Hunter really punishes Outcast DH because of the fact that it has Arcanist Unleash Fell in order to deal with the whiteboards that Outcast Demon Hunter sometimes develop, and it also just outraces it in terms of damage because of Brand. Like the moment you put a midsize, you put a wall upon the board, it's just a target to be branded, and you just get outraced. You also run Glaivetar. Both decks run Glaivetar, so you have a lot of over-the-top damage, and in a race, the Spell Demon Hunter usually wins. But otherwise, Outcast DH is a fantastic deck. It's very good against Druid. It's very good against aggressive decks because it tends to outpace it. So things like Undead Priest, Pure Paladin,
You know, all sorts of aggressive deck really struggle against Outcast because of the swing potential it has and the way that it can just flood the board and overwhelm and deny initiative from the opponent. So it's very good against other initiative-focused decks. Though even though I don't even consider Outcast DH to be an aggressive deck. It's a deck that can pressure, but it does have a lot of swing potential, and it kind of scales into the late game very intensely, let's say that. When it comes to builds, it's very interesting with Outcast DH, because what I am seeing is that after the nerf to Rowdy Fan, the Sathino combo has really dropped off. Rowdy Fan is, you cannot justify the card anymore. And without Rowdy Fan, Sathino becomes a very questionable card in the deck. So a lot of people are saying, nerf Sathino, Sathino is a problem. But in a lot of decks, in at least two decks, Sathino's position in the deck is questionable. Now, I ended up chickening out and not cutting Sathino. I was very close to just cutting Sathino from the deck.
I changed the deck and the website like an hour before I was going to go to bed because you had to remake the deck.
Yeah, the problem with Sathino is that if you cut Sathino, then Predation becomes worse, and Dispose of Evidence, which is already a card that is highly reliant on Sathino, also probably needs to get cut. So what do you even add that makes sense in the deck? I'm not sure, but this whole package, which is the off-board package, comes into question. Now, some people will say, oh, that doesn't make sense. If you cut this, how do you win the control matchups? How do you beat Blood? And that is a fair question, which is why Sathino is still not getting cut. I'm just saying that Sathino is one of the worst cards in the deck. And I'm pretty sure that if you nerfed Sathino, Outcast DH would be able to adapt in some way. Maybe you run more than one Rancher. Maybe you run double Rancher. Some people are running double Rancher and one Rush to Stage. I don't think you run one Rush to Stage. I think you very much want to run two. Question is, if you run two Ranchers, maybe you cut the Dispose of Evidence and the Predation, and you run more board cards that are really good with Rancher, and that makes you stickier against the kind of decks that just remove, like the Blood Control Death Knight, and gives you a better chance to beat them even without the Sathino combo.
But this isn't a tweak. This is an evolution that has so many different dominoes.
Yes, this is something that I really cannot do in the lab. Like, I can theorycraft something, but it wouldn't be backed by data because everybody's just locked in and just assumes that Sathino is a core card. So if you are a curious experimenter, I will tell you, you look at this package, can you find me something that is more effective? It's very possible. What I am saying is that the Sathino package, the burst package of Sathino in Outcast DH, is not a core package. And if there were alternatives out there and I could compare them, then it would be a candidate to be cut from the deck. So that's what's interesting about it. But otherwise, you know, Outcast DH does very well. It's a good deck, so maybe people feel like we don't need to make changes. But if Sathino is ever nerfed, I think there is room for adaptation here. I don't think that kills Outcast DH anywhere near. And again, it might be a step towards its evolution to like a next stage. Something else. Maybe it's not Rancher. Maybe it's something else. I don't know. But I am saying this package is not as good as people think it is. So that's about what I have to say about Outcast.
Wait, so you said Sathino is in there to beat Blood, right? Well, Zach, it's easy. Just add Fizzle. That'll do it, right?
No. Okay, so Relic DH kind of fell off. The matchup against Spell Demon Hunter is oppressively bad. So it kind of got displaced by a deck that just wins the race. But I will say that Relic DH is still good if you build it well. And when I say build it well, don't run Immolation Aura. There's no point in running it in the current format when Unholy Death Knight is still not a super popular deck. And most matchups don't require you to run AoE other than Arcanist Unleash Fell. So Immolation Aura looks like a clear trap. Going greedy is the best way to go, but Fizzle is not it. Considering that Blood Control, I noticed it in the data, Blood Control declined in its play rate to some degree, and it put Fizzle from a card, you remember the last podcast, that it was like borderline and I couldn't find something better, so it's kind of there, but it's not really good. Now it's just unplayable. Like, it needed some critical mass of blood control to be in the format to be a card that's, like, tolerable. So I can say Fizzle is no longer tolerable, and I'd like to see other stuff like Queen Ajara, which is agreed, but it's a card that's better in faster matchups because if you activate a Sauron 5 and you get a Colossal, you can blow out your opponent. It's very, you can use Ring and double Relic this way, right? It's a good Relic activator or enabler. So I think it's a card that's worth seeing more data for. The interesting thing about Relic DH is that Rowdy Fan is still fine in the stack with the Sustaino combo because of Relic of Dimensions. I didn't notice a big drop-off in that combo's performance. So if you can discount the combo consistently with Relic of Dimensions, then the nerf to Rowdy doesn't hurt it as much as it does, for example, for Outcast DH that already didn't really like having a card that just sits in your hand and disrupt your Outcast synergies just to have some reach, some burst and reach from hand. So in that deck, Rowdy Fan stays. And then you've got Big Demon Hunter. And Big Demon Hunter, there are a lot of, like, this deck is starting to pop up. The popularity is rising significantly. This is a deck that's very accessible, I think, for players looking to climb the legend. Maybe not the highest MMR players. This deck is very convenient and comfortable and fun. And yeah, it's seen like a big spike in play. I think it's already at upper diamond. It's over 7% over the last 24 hours. It's a deck you're going to run into often. And there are some interesting things about the build that people are trying out. So we talked about the proposition to cut Treasure Guard and Sethino from the deck completely in order to run Crush Claw Enforcer and have Enforcer tutor Evoker very consistently. This wasn't a slam dunk in terms of performance because, you know, the Sethino package is still quite good. And even though, you know, Evoker improves the consistency of you finding your best card, which is Evoker, the question is what happens to the rest of the card? Because you need to cut about five cards or even six if you cut the Astalor too. And you're adding Enforcer, but what else do you run? Right, and the problem with this variant that runs the Enforcer, I think, is with the other stuff that you run. And the most popular inclusion in that package is Immolation Aura. Mm. And when I looked at Immolation Aura, I said, okay, this is a trap card. It's very possible that the reason why this list performs worse than the list that runs Treasure Guard and Sethino is because two deck slots are kind of wasted with Immolation Aura. And Immolation Aura is not a good card until Unholy, like, explodes. So for now, for this report, we suggest to run Chaos Strike. Why is Chaos Strike better than Immolation Aura? Because Chaos Strike is a card you can play on turn two and activate your Crush Claw Enforcer. This deck needs spells and cheap ones that can help you activate both Enforcer and Evoker. And Immolation Aura is not a card that you just play to activate things. It's a situational card that you play into your opponent's board. So, for example, cards that are very valuable for this deck are Illidari Studies and Taste of Chaos. And the reason is because they're cheap spells that discover more spells for you. So they're, for Evoker, these are two steps. Like Illidari Studies, you can play it, discover a spectral site, and already you got two ticks on an Evoker. And Taste of Chaos obviously always discovers a spell. So these are very valuable. So having Chaos Strike is kind of a pseudo-replacement for them. Like, it's other redundancy because it's a spell that can draw you another spell. It's not as reliable as those two, but it's a card you can play on turn two, activate Enforcer, or progress towards Evoker on six. It's very important. Because sometimes you can draw Evoker and not be able to activate it. It's a card with a condition. And you need to be able to activate it on turn by turn six. And that's not trivial in this deck. Which is why we suggest Chaos Strike. And based on the data that I'm currently seeing, people are already net decking the list that we have in the report. I think that does it. I think adding Chaos Strike puts the Enforcer variant more in line in terms of power with the Sethino variant. So I think this is a viable alternative. And again, if aggressive decks, board flooding decks pop up, maybe we revisit Immolation Aura. Maybe that card next week, I'll tell you, okay, that card is a lot better now. Maybe we should run it. But for now, this is what the suggestion is. So again, Outcast DH could cut Citheno. Big DH could cut Citheno. And yeah, that's what happened with Demon Hunter. You see diversity, a lot of strategic diversity, decks that are different from each other and feel different from each other. If every class in the format was this diverse, then we would be, I think this would be the best meta ever. But obviously, yeah, it's very difficult to reach a point where every class has like four different strategies that are different and are good and feel nice. And yeah, it's not going to, that's usually not going to happen. But Death Knight, Demon Hunter, I think they are a goal for the other classes. I wish that that was the case. You want classes to be the way that Death Knight and Demon Hunter function, which is part of the reason why I'm glad they didn't kill Blood and Frost and kept them viable.
Pretty cool. I'm glad that we have seven decks across the first two classes. And now things start narrowing because we get to Druid.
Yep, but I will say about Druid that even though Zogdruid is one archetype, there's a lot of interesting stuff going on within their archetype, all sorts of options that you can utilize. And that is a little, like, even though the decks are pretty almost identical,
they're identical on paper. They don't play the same. There are choices that make them play differently.
There's some flexibility. So let's go over Zogdruid. Zogdruid is a deck that I think is mostly feels powerful because of high MMR players' absolute refusal or reluctance to play aggressive decks. And what happened over the last week is that Zogdruid seemed really powerful in high MMR, and high MMR players queue into that deck, and they lose because they don't want to play something aggressive. And then they complain on Twitter that this deck is too good. This deck is not good if there is any critical mass of aggression. And it doesn't even have to be a lot of aggression. Like, you go to Diamond Ranks, there's some aggressive deck. There's some more pure paladins, and you see some more, maybe more unholy Death Knights compared to top legend. That deck is starting to show up, and Zogdruid is unplayable. It's unplayable. You look at its win rate and its matchup performance, it's unplayable. At top legend, it's playable because it counters Spell DH, which is more popular at top legend. And again, people are very reluctant to play decks that have aggression, that can pressure. The only decks that they choose usually is like Miracle Rogue and Outcast DH, that they do beat Zogdruid, but not as hard as something like a pure paladin does, right? So Zogdruid is very meta-dependent, and it's not a deck that I see as an issue in the format. It's just a polarizing deck that's situationally good if people are just refusing to play aggressive decks, mostly. When it comes to options within Zogdruid archetype, there are all sorts of viable paths that you can take. So one of the things that I noticed after, you know, the first report and the first iterations of this deck, because this deck is quite complicated to play, is that this deck seems to perform better when its minion package, its Summer Flower Child package, is smaller. And why is that? It makes sense, because if you run less minions that can be found by Summer Flower Child, you're more likely to find an Ubercon. And this deck is really an Anubricon deck. It's an Anubricon Zoc deck. And in most matchups, what ends the game is the Anubricon Under King Zoc. That's the play that ends the game. And if you run a lot of expensive minions, then you find it less consistently. You're less likely to find Anubricon and Zoc together. And if you find them first, then your chances of winning the game increase. So what players started doing is to run 5 targets for Summer Flower Child. It makes sense to run 5 because you want the second Summer Flower Child to also be relevant, and it maximizes an Ubercon consistency. So this is what people are doing. And if you do run around 6 minions, then players hide the 6th card, which is usually Jailer, because Jailer is not a card you want to run. You want to draw from Summer Flower Child. Because it's mostly relevant in specific matchups where you want to combo it with Tony, or in matchups where people cannot deal with Jailer. But Jailer doesn't win you faster matchups. Like, it's not a card that you play in order to win. It's mostly a card you use to beat things like Blood Death Knight, right? So people are just putting that inside ETC, and they're putting Crazed Alchemist inside the ETC. And then they have ETC offer them the win condition for the slower matchup, which is the Jailer, or a win condition for the faster matchups, which is you make a huge Zoc Tondrid, like you make a huge taunt from Zoc, and then you flip its health into attack and kill your opponent with a Crazed Alchemist. So that's really cool. And the other popular card that people put in to ETC is Smothering Starfish in order to answer the opponent's Zoc. Because if they play Zoc with like 30 health and taunt, then what do? You need to be able to bypass that. And Smothering Starfish allows you to do that. So that's the interesting wrinkle. And then, you know, the fifth minion is either Mosher or it's Ozumat. Right? The only variant that I think should run Jailer is when you run Chitinous Platen and you don't run Mosher or Ozumat and you completely prioritize on armor gain in order to beat the Spell Druid. And obviously in a meta with a lot of Spell Druid, you don't need something to clear the board because they don't play minions. So Mosher and Ozumat are less relevant. All these variants are viable. The Chitinous Platen variant is the one that's best position against Spell Demon Hunter. Ozumat, I think, is generally well-rounded. I think it's good against multitude of things. And then the Mosher build is better against aggressive decks because of the ability to deal with a white board. The problem with that is that and against an aggressive meta, you might as well not play Zoc Druid, right? That's kind of the thing. And Ozumat gives you, I think, more agency against aggressive decks because you don't only have the Ozumat, you also have the Explosive Sheep. And you can draw the Explosive Sheep quite more consistently because you're running Peaceful Piper, and that can draw you the Explosive Sheep. So there are a lot of options, and we specified them with Zoc Druid. Again, it's a decent deck. It's a good deck. It's a competitive deck. It's very powerful in the late game, but it's very vulnerable to pressure. And not just pressure from aggressive decks, but pressure by any deck that can exert pressure. Things like Miracle Rogue, Outcast DH. Those things beat Zoc Druid very reliably. But that's not the only Druid deck. You've got Big Druid as well. And Big Druid is the deck that if you want to play Druid and you want to climb the legend, then you run Big Druid. You don't run Zoc Druid.
Ironically, Big Druid is not as big as Zoc Druid, but it's still like it's faster.
Yeah, because Whomper Hedgemaze can beat anything. If you Hedgemaze into Whomper, like any matchup, like any deck can struggle against that, right? So something like Miracle Rogue, which is normally a counter to Druid, against Big Druid can really struggle because, I mean, it doesn't, like the matchup is not unfavored for the Rogue, but Druid does a lot better because it's hard to beat Whomper into Hedgemaze into Whomper into a Stormborn General, right? Like the Miracle Rogue doesn't have the removal required to deal with that kind of cheese, kind of scam. So the scam potential makes Big Druid better in faster matchups. Like it still loses to Pure Paladin, but the matchup is like, compared to Zoc, is like over 10% better. That's significant. So if you want to play Druid or a ramping Druid deck and you don't queue into Spell Demon Hunters, because top legend Spell Demon Hunters actually beats Big Druid, then you take this deck. And it's pretty fun. The one change that we made from the Jobber list is run another Drum Circle. I talked about it in the previous podcast. This was a likely change. And this is what is reflected in the list from the report. Drum Circle is just really good with Tambourine. And also with the other stuff that you're cheating out, it's very nice to give them Taunt and Stabilize this way. And shut down the opponent's ability to hit your face. So yeah, Big Druid is a nice deck. Though at top legend, it's slightly worse than Zoc because it actually loses to Spell Demon Hunter. You don't have a reliable sustain, and your big stuff are just brand targets, right? You get an 8-8, and they just brand it, and you just die.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk Miracle Rogue. Is it the busted boogeyman of the format? Been good for too long? Overpowered?
No, not really. Miracle Rogue is fine. Its matchup spread is pretty balanced overall at high levels of play. It struggles against spell DH, and most of what we did with this list that we have in the report is try to be as good as possible against spell DH and make that matchup more tolerable. Because if you run Thalnos Phantom Knives,
it's good luck.
That is not what you want against spell DH.
I had a full day today of playing Miracle Rogue. My win rate was abysmal. And against a spell Demon Hunter, I made 2 9-9s on turn 4 and lost the game. Lost the game.
Yeah.
Because they just don't care.
That matchup is rough. But I will say that Cult Neophyte helps. If you run double Cult Neophyte Pozic, that adds the percentage. That makes it that matchup a little more tolerable. Maybe you go over 40%. Against spell DH if you run double Neophyte Pozic. So that's what we try to do in the report in order to help that matchup. And Miracle Rogue doesn't have its strength. It's pretty good against Druid, but again, not as good as it used to be. It's pretty solid against Demon Hunter, Big Demon Hunter. It's okay. It goes 50-50 without cast. So its matchup spread is decently balanced. Its main counter other than spell Demon Hunter is Control Priest. It's again, if you're constantly running to spell Demon Hunters, then it's rough. And Miracle Rogue's win rate is tittering between tier 2 and tier 3 at high levels of play. I think if spell DH continues to rise in play and isn't checked, that Miracle Rogue is kind of in danger of falling into tier 3 even. So even though Frost Decay was a counter to Miracle Rogue and it declined, it got replaced by a counter that's even a harder counter. So Miracle Rogue didn't really benefit from the decline of Frost Death Knight. So, yeah. Now, the other deck that kind of shows up is Secret Rogue. And Secret Rogue just doesn't have the same lethality of Miracle Rogue. The upside of Miracle Rogue is that it's a deck, it's a resource-focused deck with power spikes that can happen later in the game. But it can also snowball very early, which is very valuable against something like Zoctorid, right? Secret Rogue doesn't have that kind of pressure, but its disruption is kind of nice against Demon Hunter decks with Gravedigger. If you start just taking away things from your opponent and you deny their ability to assemble pieces like Brand Warband, then it's okay, but you still lose to Spell Demon Hunter, right? You're like, the matchup is still unfavored, but maybe it's a little bit better than Miracle Rogue in that specific matchup. But again, it loses a lot of percentages and against other things. Now, the one thing that's kind of cool about Secret Rogue is that people started running Blinktron in it. And the reason you run Blinktron is to set up Astralor. Now, Miracle Rogue does run Astralor too, but Miracle Rogue is not reliant on Astralor damage as much as Secret Rogue, because Secret Rogue doesn't have Sinstone Graveyard. It doesn't have threats like Miracle Rogue does, so it's more reliant on Astralor to end the game. And if you run Astralor and you ramp it up and you get the 8 mana Astralor and a turn before you play Blinktron, then the Astralor damage becomes really difficult to outlast. Like,
that's a lot of number. We've seen that before in Shadow Priest. We've seen it before.
Yeah, it's like Void Touch Attendant Astralor. It's kind of a nutty late game combo. And Secret Rogue can kind of build towards that. So that's kind of cool. The other thing people are doing in Secret Rogue is running ETC. And again, they're not running ETC with like a bunch of tech cards that are silly. They're running ETC with very, very targeted and pointed additions. So you either run Eviscerate, right? One of the band members is Eviscerate, which is just burst, just gives you reach. It helps you finish off games. Another is Clergy, which gives you healing in aggressive matchups. That's a card that's not very good in Rogue if you run it in the main deck, but if you run it in ETC, then it makes more sense. And then the third card is Fizzle. And Fizzle, you almost never take Fizzle in the ETC ban. You only take Fizzle if your hand allows for it. So like, if your hand is big and value centric and you have maybe an Astralor or Shadow Step in there, then you can Fizzle it and it makes more sense.
But Fizzle is not a card that you want to hard run in the deck. But as a third band member, it's okay. It might be okay. So that's kind of what Secret Rogue is doing. And then Menagerie Rogue, the list in the report is kind of different from the most popular list in ladder. It takes out the conditional Shadow Step, which is, again, Shadow Step is not great. Breakdance is not great. The surprising thing is that Blinktron, even after the buff, is not good. And Ziliax isn't good either. Because it's just slow for this deck. And this deck mostly wants to pressure. The main issue of Menagerie Rogue, lack of card draw. This deck really wants card draw. Even though you run the potion, the concoction package. The concoction package is not a reliable form of card draw. And Gorlok Ravager is really good. Because it can find you, it finds you all the amalgams, and it finds you the most powerful card in your deck, which is the one amalgam band. So it finds you amalgam band, and it finds you cards, cheap cards, that you can use to fuel up the one amalgam band. So the way I look, when I looked at the data this week, my conclusion is that a Gorlok Ravager core package is just core for every Menagerie deck because of the added consistency in finding and juicing up your one amalgam band. So that's the reason why the rogue list is as it is. And hopefully I'll get some data on it. The problem is Menagerie decks, I don't think that people are thirsty to play them. They're not, like, these decks are not decks that seem to be very attractive to the player base. And unless they show insane numbers, unless they're like tier one, I don't know if they're going to see much play.
You've given me a mission. After this show, I'm gonna go Gorlok. I'm gonna go, man. I would Shadow Step my Gorlok, but we don't play Shadow Step.
Yes, you really okay. Don't need to Shadow Step Gorlok.
I don't want it. I don't want it, but we don't play it. I'm just noting that. Isn't it interesting how not all the rogue decks are playing Shadow Step, and it might be fine that it's in standard.
Yeah. Shadow Step is a complementary piece that, like, for example, if Shadow Step wasn't in the format right now, then the combo package from Festival Legends would have no chance of ever seeing play. The fact that Shadow Step exists gives that package an opportunity maybe in the future to be good enough. But currently it definitely isn't. Okay, Priest. Undead Priest, good deck. This is a deck that didn't need to change. The nerfs to Frost and Blood makes the Swarm build much better than the Burn build. No card changes. I looked at Boneflinger. I looked at all sorts of stuff. Nothing seems to be better than the cards that currently exist in the list. The deck is doing work. Very powerful. Good matchup spread. Only has a few bad matchups. Otherwise, doesn't really care. Very reliable climber. At all levels of play, it is very, very good. I think the main counter for it is, guess what? Spell DH. And Outcast Demon Hunter. Those are the main counters. Otherwise, it's chilling. It's doing quite decent work. I do think that Unholy Aggro Deathite may have an edge against it. May be able to develop an edge, but very small one. So Undead Priest, good deck. Control Priest. I rage conceded trying to build Control Priest this week. And I had to build it twice. Like, I built it once, and I didn't really like it. And then I rebuild it, and I came up with the same 40 cards. So probably the list is as good as it gets. When it comes to this is the variant, the Astalor Ajaro variant is the Control Priest that tries to win games. There is another variant that doesn't try to win games. You run Armor Vendor and Sun Fury Clergy, and you just try to sustain in hopes of doing something in the Spell Demon Hunter matchup. So in the last podcast, I may have misled people. I said maybe Control Priest has a chance to counter Spell Demon Hunter. No, that's not a thing.
Does it have a chance to, like, make up ground?
This matchup is oppressively bad for Control Priest. I think day one data told me that day one or day two data told me that Control Priest might have a close matchup as Spell Demon Hunter. Then I saw that matchup going dark red
within days. And my assumption is that Spell Demon Hunter players just learned that not to throw their resources aimlessly into a sustaining control priest and be able to space their damage in a way that makes the control priest very uncomfortable. And that's what happens. Basically, control priest is kind of unplayable into Spell Demon Hunter. You can, like, if you run Vendor and Clergy, maybe you gain something, but you're still significantly unfavored. And the problem with the sustain, I don't win, I just try to remove and heal variant is that if you don't have proactive win conditions, you really suffer in other late game matchups. So I'm not sure. Again, Control Priest, I think it might be the hardest deck to build in the format. Based on the data that I saw, proactivity is key. You really want to be proactive. You really want to be able to play stuff every turn. The one thing that maybe you do in order to adjust to Spell Demon Hunter popping up more is maybe you run the Armor Vendor over the Fan Club. That's kind of it. I don't see other major adjustments that you can make in that matchup to make that better. Maybe you find a way to add Vendor and Clergy, but I don't think you cut Astalor. I don't think you cut Queen Ajara. I think that's a mistake. You want win conditions. Maybe you add sustain, but don't, not at the cost of win conditions. You really want to run Astalor when you're running power cord synchronize. You really want Astalor, that deck. And same for Ajara. Ajara is really good. Like, it's a proactive win condition that can just end the game in a faster matchups and gives you can give you key value in slower matchups too. So that's kind of it for Control Priest. But again, if Spell Demon Hunter pops up, my advice, add Vendor, add Clergy, but that's it. Don't cut win conditions. Mage. Mage is my deck right now, Hat. This is my deck.
I saw you were spookying.
Yeah. Spooky Mage is really good. I think that the problem is that aggregated stats are not going to be able to tell you that because people are playing so much trash with Spooky Mage. They're playing... I understand why they're doing it, because it's fun to play Romath and a bunch of like casino package cards with Infinitize the Maxitude, and you run Kel'Thuzad, because if you're running Spooky, you might as well go the spookiest card with Kel'Thuzad the Inevitable. But these cards are really slow. And in this format, you want to have a fast win condition. Generally in Hearthstone, it's preferable to have a win condition that comes online faster. And just going Frozen Touch with an efficient curve gets the job done. In addition, the greed doesn't really help you in slower matchups. The thing about the greed is that the greediest card in the deck, essentially, is Frozen Touch. Like, that card is so much damage. Like, if you're playing against Blood Death Knight, you just want to find that as soon as possible. You want to copy it with volume up. If you have a bunch of Frozen Touches and you have a consistent way to produce more skeletons to constantly infuse Frozen Touches, you're winning slow matchups. You don't have a problem with Control Priest that way.
Oh, yeah. The Priest matchup is my favorite. Like, it'll take a while, but you'll just deal them like 100, literally 100 damage.
Yeah, it might seem daunting at first to queue up into Control Priest or Blood Death Knight with Vampiric Blood and stuff. But trust me, they die. And if there's any question that they die to the Frozen Touch, they die to the Vexilis.
We're Vexin? We're playing Sexy Vexy?
Yeah, so here's the thing. Before the patch, I suggested most people are running Astalor and Flame Geyser. Most people are doing that. And Astalor isn't great in this deck. It's probably because the card only comes online on turn 10, really, as a damage source. And it's not a direct damage source. If you've fallen behind on board, it doesn't really get the job done, right? It's a board clear. It's a decent card. But Astalor in this deck doesn't seem to synergize with what you're trying to do. And I suggested why don't we run Arcane Bolt and Vexilus? I threw that up. I saw very little data on it. It was promising. And I said, let's play that. And now, over a couple weeks later, this still seems like the most powerful thing to do. Maybe people aren't doing it because they don't want to craft Vexilus. And I get that. But if you do have Vexilus, it seems like the best way to go.
Zach, I'm so happy you did this. And unrelated, I have a golden one.
Yeah, so the thing about Vexilus is that it's very easy for you if you run Arcane Bolts and you run Volume Up and you have the Arc Splitter and you have the Arcane Worm. Sometimes you just randomly end up on turn 8 with a Vexilus and 3 bolts. And that is a lot of damage. That's like 18 damage. So easy. And sometimes the Vexilus gets the Aegwynn buff.
And that's 30 damage. That's 30.
30 damage.
That's how much life they start with.
Yeah. And like very often, like I queue into a Blood Death Knight. And if by some miracle they keep outlasting my frozen touches, I just randomly end up with like a burst of like 24 damage or 30 damage and they die. They cannot outlast the Vexilus. And Vexilus just makes your Arc Splitter and Arcane Worms just better. You just hold it. If you draw Vexilus early, you can plan for it. It's also very helpful against Demon Hunter, in my experience, because Demon Hunter often heals with, like, you pressure and you play skeletons, and eventually they Arcanist Unleash Fell, and they heal back up. The Vexilus just makes sure that they die. So it's very good, and very often you can just Vexilus and like play like a cheap card that got buffed by the Aegwynn buff. You get a Suspicious Alchemist with a +2 damage. It's just so much damage. And the bolts are useful early in the game. Like the bolts, you can use them to just clear stuff. So it's good for your survivability too. So I recommend if you have Vexilus, craft it. If you don't want to craft Vexilus, I guess you go with the Astler Flame Geyser. So far, from what I'm seeing, the Vexilus path is better. So that's something to keep in mind. And again, this deck is quite good. This deck is tier 2-ish. Don't be fooled by the Spooky Mage aggregated win rate, because most people are playing builds with Rollmath and Kel'Thuzad.
And also, do not go to the front page of HS Replay and screenshot and say Mage is the worst class in the game. It's not even the bottom anymore. But Zach, you have any Naga Mage breakthroughs? No, I didn't think so.
No, the reason why Mage has or had the worst win rate is because a lot of people are playing Naga Mage, and you know, Habu Gabu came back to Hearthstone and did the thing where he does, which is win with 30% win rate decks. Well, to be fair, Naga Mage has a 40% win rate now, but yeah, it's not good. It's not good no matter how you build it. It's just not it. So. Other mage decks, you know, Mech Mage is okay, but it's kind of mediocre. Mech Paladin is the better mech deck. I'm seeing some Secret Mage. People are trying to speak Secret Mage. It's not good. Mage is not good unless you go Spooky, but Spooky Mage is a good deck. It's a tier 2-ish deck. And the other thing that I will note that I think could be very important, this deck beats Spell Demon Hunter. And the reason it beats Spell Demon Hunter is because besides Aegwynn, all of your minions are kind of small. None of them are brandable. I don't think you have a single minion that you have like with over 3 health. Just Aegwynn. That's it. Aegwynn and Vexilus. But Vexilus is the minion you play when they
Vexilus
die.
Vexilus is not a minion. Vexilus is a quest reward.
Yeah. Oh, Sivara, I guess. Sivara is a brandable card. Your other minions are not brandable. Like, they're not very good with Sinful Brand. They don't have 4 health and above. And you also have Solid Alibi. So the addition, you have a lot of burst from hand, a lot of damage from hand. So Arcanist Unleash isn't that effective against you. And, you know, if you play a huge skeleton board and you get one off of Deathborn, then even if they Arcanist fell, Unleash fell, they don't heal up. They kind of neutralize the damage because they take the death rattles of the skeletons. So it doesn't heal them really if they do Unleash Fell on a board of skeletons. So that's kind of something to keep in mind with this deck. This deck is good against Spell Demon Hunter. has a good matchup against it. And the Demon Hunter, you know, they can top themselves off with a Silverman with Arcanius Fell on turn 8 and still die on turn 10 because of the Frozen Touches and the Vexilis and all that stuff. So the deck is quite good for that matchup. The problem matchup, I think, is probably Zhokdrid. Because of the armor gain that they have and the pressure on top of the armor gain. You really cannot deal with an Obracon turn. So I think that's the problem matchup for the deck. But otherwise, I think the deck is good. Good against Rogue, too. You know, they play Sinful Sinstone Graveyard, and they get 10-10s, and you just Solid Alibi 4 turns in a row. And I've done that, and I made people uninstall the game. It's very effective.
I'm glad you're enjoying yourself, and sorry for what you did to them.
I said this on purpose just to trigger you. Hat hates Solid Alibi. He hates that card.
I mean, like, okay. We're not rewinding it anymore. Everyone got that out of their system of playing like 9 Solid Alibis in the game. At least you have the decency to just kill the opponent and end the game. We're fine. It's fine.
I did play 5 Solid Alibis a game.
I mean, that's more than I think should happen in a game, but then you lethaled. It wasn't just like 9 of them or whatever.
I'm going to tell you, it's going to cheer you up, Pat. I actually lost that game where I 5-time Solid Alibi.
Oh, I'm so much happier now. So much happier now.
I'm here to cheer you up, you see?
Yeah.
So still Solid Alibis balanced.
I'm glad you lost.
Perfectly balanced. I played 5 Solid Alibis and I lost the game. The card is fine.
Try winning next time.
Yeah. Okay. So that is Mage. So Mage, again, good class. Don't underestimate it. The deck that we have in the report for Spooky Mage is actually quite good.
What about Warrior? Is Warrior a good class?
No. But it's not as bad as it used to be, so I'm always, you know, glass full, half full kind of type. So, and there's some, I will say there's some interesting stuff that I'm noticing from after the report came out and people are doing. So first of all, Enrage Warrior, if you want to play Enrage Warrior is a solid deck. The aggressive curve that we have in the report is quite good. Hook Fist, if you find a card that's better than Hook Fist, try it out. Don't be attached to the Hook Fist. It's a card that I put there because there was nothing better that I could find. And considering the low play rate of the deck, there weren't a lot of options there that I could use in the data. So that's something to keep in mind. But the deck is quite competitive. It's fairly okay. Control Warrior, still experimentation there. I put a prototype. I'll call it a prototype in this report. I want to see data on Stalwart. I want to see more data on stuff on School Teacher over Sword Eater. I think Sword Eater is kind of a trap card because it makes Last Stand worse. I want to see if that theory is correct. There are other candidates as well. Olgra is a card that's not in the list in the report. It actually looked quite disappointing when I evaluated in the data this week, and I opted not to run Olgra for now, but it's very possible that if Stalwart is not that good, then maybe you split it, 1 Olgra, 1 Stalwart, and run 4 taunts. That's a possibility. I just want to see how Stalwart performs, and then we'll see what happens. Other people are trying to run Bash for early game removal. I'm not sure about that. There are experimentation, and again, Control Warrior is never going to be super competitive in this format. I think that it's still like 2 cards away. I'm here to propose to Team 5, buff Chorus Rift to 2 and buff Revert from the Death back to 3. Make the minions be discounted by 2. So don't put From the Depth back to its original power, but make it a 3 mana card. And the reason that's important is because, boy oh boy, this Warrior deck needs turn meaningful plays on turn 2 and turn 3. If you gave them the ability to bridge into a Igneous Lava Gorger or a School Teacher and then Black Rock and Roll into Bridge Rift, I think this deck can cook. But currently, the problem is that the fact that it continuously passes turn 2 and 3 just hurts it. It hurts it in the slower matchups too. Make no mistake about it. Having meaningful turn 2 plays and turn 3 plays is very important in more than just the aggressive matchups. It's important against Miracle Rogue. It's important against Outcast DH. Being able to utilize, spend your mana
Spend your mana. There's a wise Hearthstone streamer that keeps saying, spend your mana. This is what Warrior needs to do in the early game. So, yeah. Give them those buffs. And I think Control Warrior is cooking. When it comes to Menagerie Hat, okay, we had a list in the report. I think that was the best list with the data available. I think Gorlok Ravager is really good. You want to run that in a Menagerie deck. It's really good for the one Amalgam Ban. Something else is cooking, Hat, that I'm starting to notice. I think it came from the Vicious Syndicate Discord. There is a cult of Nelly the Great Thresher. People are saying Nelly's the nuts. I didn't have enough data on Nelly for this report, but I'm starting to have data for Nelly now. And Nelly could be the Giga Nuts.
I was going to ask you about this. I'm looking at both HSR and Donkey Site, and some of the higher win rate, really low sample lists, really low sample, are
this
Nelly.
This is something from the last 48 hours.
Oh, wow.
This is something from the last... The reason why you're seeing low samples, I'm seeing those samples too. This is something that started to pop up from the last 48 hours. So it wasn't in the database for this report, and I could not evaluate Nelly. And Nelly looks, again, preliminary, low sample, looks like one of the best cards in the deck. In addition to that, they're running Rifts. Like some of the new variants are running the Rift package. And the Rift package could be a way to get card draw into this deck that's not Gorlok Ravager reliant. So there's something cooking there, and Menagerie Warrior could be better than it looks. It could be even better than it looks post-refinement, like better than what the list that we have in the report looks. So I would try it out. Try Nelly. Try some Rift package. There could be something cooking there. And this deck could be actually the best Warrior deck. Maybe even better than an Enrage Warrior.
No way.
Maybe even, yeah. Menagerie Warrior is something that people are just under-exploring because there's a lack of interest. So not a lot of players are trying to experiment with its build, and it's taking time. But based on the last 48 hours and things that new that are developing, the list of the report next week is probably going to be quite interesting and different from the list that I had with the current data set, with the last week's data set. So look out, watch out for Menagerie Warrior. I think this deck could be quite good. But again, I'm being cautious here. I'm going to be cautious here. I'd like to see more data on these directions, but there's something going on there. And Nelly, I would add Nelly. I think Nelly, I'd like to see more data on Nelly.
This list looks interesting. The curve is low, and then you got a couple big old sevens. I'm kind of here for this.
And you run Bridge Rift.
Yeah.
You run the Rifts.
I might just log off here and just start menagering people. Menagerying. Yeah. I don't know if that's a word.
I guess. But again, Blizzard, Chorus Rift to 2. And from the depths, 3 mana, discount the cards by 2. We're cooking. I think Control Warrior can cook. So let it cook. Okay.
And now we're finally onto Paladin, which has gotten some buzz in the High Legend community lately.
Yeah, there's some stuff. So first of all, Pure Paladin's actually seen development. People have seen that I was apparently wrong about Fengfeng and Jitterbug, and they're saving me here. They're proving me right. They're vindicating me. You're cutting the cards that I thought would be bad. Okay, Boogie Down is a complete whiff on my part. Card is good. Card's still good in the Garden's Grace build because it's a holy spell that discounts Garden's Grace. But what Pure Paladin is being exposed for is the problem that if you're not ahead on the board, you kind of suck. Or if you don't have a significant board advantage, then Fengfeng and Jitterbug are kind of lame. So people are cutting these cards and they're running a Garden's Grace package. And Garden's Grace, what it does, it gives you an additional threat to just kill your opponent, even if you only have a single minion in play, which works very well with Disco Mole because you juice up a minion, a big minion, they can't clear it, and then they proceed to... buff it with Garden's Grace, and they definitely can't kill it, right?
Yeah, and what I like a lot about this list as well is that it runs Anachronos, and that card is crazy good. It's so good right now.
Yeah, Anachronos, usually you play this in the slower archetypes, but what that does, first of all, it's a card that you can draw from Purator. So it's Purator fodder. It's pretty good. You have Sinful Chef. You've got Anachronos. You've got Leviathan and some mechs.
And then Double Light Ray.
You've got the Double Light Ray. So you draw a bunch of very powerful cards from Purator, and Anachronos is another one. But the thing that Anachronos does is that it gives you a board reset. Sometimes you fall behind as a pure paladin, you've got nothing to do. So you play Anachronos, and suddenly the board is reset, and you can take over the initiative again. So this card is quite valuable with this archetype, and I'm definitely seeing that the Garden's Grace Purator build is better than the older iteration with, you know, Argent Protector, Funk Fin, Jitterbug, that kind of stuff. So Pure Paladin, even though it's a deck that usually stagnates and kind of falls off at higher levels of play, seems to have found new wind, right? Something else to experiment with, and it looks promising and may upgrade the deck and allow it to stay powerful even though other decks are catching up, right? Pure Paladin right now, best deck in the game, best performer, according to the database for the report, up until Top Legend. I wrote in the report that this expectation that it would lose that number one place but above Platinum. But this can help it, you know, keep up with, you know, Unholy Death Knight refining and you know, ramping up in terms of power and other stuff looking better, like Big Demon Hunter and all sorts of new decks that are popping up and trying to take over from Pure Paladin's win rate dominance currently. The other deck that Paladin has that's very interesting and might be more relevant for high-level players is Mech Paladin. So Mech Paladin, strangely, is worse than Pure Paladin in every other rank bracket except for Top Legend, where Mech Paladin is superior.
Oh, I'm looking at the matchup spread. I bet I know why. It starts with an S and rhymes with Pell Demon Hunter.
Yeah. Mech Paladin is an aggressive deck. I think might be the only aggressive deck. I mean, Unholy is fine against it, right? We know that. Face Hunter is fine against it too. Mech Paladin just straight up counters Spell Demon Hunter.
You know how you beat Sinful Brand? Make everything brandable. Every single card in the deck.
The thing is, Bubblebot, if you give your mech board Divine Shield, Arcanist Unleashed Fell does not work. This is the main reason why this is a big counter to Spell Demon Hunter, because Demon Hunter hates Divine Shields. They cannot deal with Divine Shield. It's so annoying. If you connect a Bubblebot, it's like game over. They have no hope of being able to Arcanist Unleash Fell you.
And what also hurts really bad is you stick a Bronze Gatekeeper on a Goldwing, game's going to be over before Unleash Fell matters.
Yeah, you play Goldwing on 4, and if they don't clear the Goldwing, the game is over. They just die. You just magnetize and just punch them. And they can't even Sinful Brand you properly. They have no hope of being able to outrace you in the damage department. So Mech Paladin has great tools that give it the ability to counter Spell Demon Hunter reliably. And John Bray took this deck after he read the report and did very well with it, though I don't think we should be cutting Goldwing. Goldwing is a really good card in the deck in terms of what it does specifically in the Spell Demon Hunter matchup. But he did do very well with that deck, even without Goldwing. So he played with a handicapped and still did well with it, which shows that the deck is quite strong. Other than that, obviously it's an aggressive deck with Magnetize, so it's going to beat Druids. So it's a deck that can counter both Zog Druid and Spell Demon Hunter. Not a lot of those in a format, so Mech Paladin, I think, is greatly underrated currently. And we'll see if high MMR players are willing to play this deck, even though they are very elitist in their deck choices.
Yeah, the biggest downside, I think, is Soul Stealer and just Miracle Rogue in general, what they do. You don't really want to face either of these. And the Unholy DK matchup, not great either, but it's good against Spell DH, it's good against Undead Priest, and it's good against, it crushes Druid. I think that's a good spot to be.
Yeah, obviously it's situational. It's not good against everything. There are some matchups, especially Miracle Rogue and Unholy,
Death Knight that just get under it. But, you know, it's a deck. It's a deck that wins some matchups and loses some matchups. And currently, the matchup it wins are matchups that are valuable. So that's the message. And that's it for Paladin. Shaman, again, a class that doesn't see much play but has a very viable deck. Totem Shaman is quite good, very similar to pure Paladin in terms of being able to counter Druid very effectively and having a decent matchup spread. Again, kind of struggles against decks that accelerate against it and don't give it the ability to snowball the board. So it does well against passive decks and struggles more against the proactive early game strategies that just, you know, clear the totems and don't let it develop the initiative. But it is quite a good deck. The list in the report is looking very good. Bloodlust is important, obviously, in the current meta. In addition to that, the card draw from both Famished Fool and Ancestral Knowledge is proving to be very valuable. As more players run the build that we have in the report, the deck is improving because there are some builds that don't run the Famished Fool Ancestral Knowledge, only run one of them. And you want both of them in the current format. It's also good against Blood. It's good against Control Priest. And it makes it more difficult for you to be ran out of resources. You just always have the ability to load the board. And if you get an early Stonerite, then all of your totems become insane threats and it becomes extremely... Like, you cannot take a turn off against Totem Shaman. If you let them stick a board one time, you're dead. Like, so even though the deck is very reliant on dealing damage through the board, the fact that it's so threatening and has infinite reload makes it really difficult to deal with. And if you have a totem board and you play Rotkill on it, good night. Like, it's just such a powerful way to make sure that your board is, like, impossible to deal with. You can end up with, like, a 10-10 totem after your opponent starts clearing all the other stuff and the death rattle from the Rotkill keeps buffing your other stuff. It's so difficult to deal with. Okay, so Totem Shaman is good. Warlock, I think Warlock is actually the worst class in the game. I think Warlock is worse than Warrior. I'm going to call it right now. Warrior, I think Menagerie, with the developments over the last 48 hours, if people give it a chance, I think there's a good chance that Menagerie becomes relevant. Imp Warlock looks okay statistically in the report.
The interest isn't there. No one cares.
It's not just the interest, it's the Spell Demon Hunter matchup.
Oh, yeah, that's bad, isn't it?
The future trends for Imp Warlock look grim. This is a deck that looks good right now, but it struggles since it completely gets obliterated by Unholy Death Knight. It gets completely obliterated by Spell Demon Hunter. Those are two of the fastest rising decks in the format. So even though Imp Warlock statistically in this report looks kind of fine, looks close to like tier 2, tier 3, around the 50% win rate, that's going to change by next week. I think Imp Warlock is already unplayable if you take it to ladder right now. So it's unfortunate. And considering that Chad Warlock is also pretty bad, Warlock is dying. Warlock is definitely dying and not going to be playable. Again, Warrior is the better class as it currently stands. Does Warlock need buffs? I actually think that Imp Warlock, if you nerf Spell Demon Hunter, can be fine. I think the buffs were meaningful in the sense that the fatigue package is a lot better. Like, I evaluate the card. Crescendo and Conductor are so much better. Like, these are now two of the strongest cards in the deck. They're not outliers, per se, but these are cards that previously were like, oh, okay, these cards are okay. And now these cards are like, oh, these cards are good. So I think those are meaningful changes and it really helped Imp Warlock. Because if the format wasn't centered on Spell DH and now Unholy, I think it would have a chance. But it doesn't have any more because those decks are rising. Chad needs help. I don't know what kind of help it needs. I think it needs a better late game. I think that Symphony of Sins, just make it... I really liked your idea that you floated in this podcast. And I adopted it. Symphony of Sins needs to be able to discover from all 7 options. If you do that, I think the card's good. And that gives Chad Warlock another reliable card that it can utilize. Because right now, Symphony is just not great. People are mostly running it for the funsies. People are even running it in Imp Warlock.
They're running it over Drathir because they want to play the more fun new card.
Yeah, I would just run both if you want to run, because Darkhan is really good. So I think you would run that and just cut another card for Symphony for the culture. But other than that, don't run Symphony and Imp if you want to win. Maximize your wins. And then Chad, it's kind of one of the worst cards in the deck. I think that's a problem. So yeah, you probably want to buff that. But otherwise, I think Chad Warlock is kind of a big deck that just gets run over early if it gets snowballed. And its late game is not powerful enough compared to things like Zoctorid and even Blood Control Death Knight. You kind of need to ETC and discover, like, to beat Blood Control, you either cheese them early and they get overwhelmed and they don't find the removal in time, or you ETC, you discover, you get the War Rider, Rivendare, you play Rivendare, the Rivendare dies, and you don't get patchworked. Like, that's what needs to happen. Or you resurrect it with Reanimator. It's a very clunky win condition, right? It's not the most reliable thing to do. So, yeah, Chad has both early game flaws and late game flaws. And the final class hat might be the most underrated one of them all, which is Hunter.
We hunting?
Face Hunter. One of the meta breakers for this report. Because people are just completely sleeping on this archetype. This is a deck that demolishes Zoctorid, has a decent matchup against Spell Demon Hunter. Matchup is around 50-50. Which makes it better than other aggressive decks that just lose against Spell Demon Hunter. And the build that we had in the report looks nuts. It looks nuts. I'm certain about 29 cards. 29 cards are perfect, I think. They look really, really good. And then the 30th card is the sussiest one. It was Mr. Mukla. Mukla doesn't look good. I suggested in this report run Dragonbane. Dragonbane is a good card against Spell Demon Hunter because they don't have minions, so it's just a free, like, turn 6, you play Dragonbane, your hero power, it's like 7 damage. It's pretty solid way to get more reach in the matchup. The problem with Dragonbane is really weak in other matchups, so I'm not sure that's good enough, right? So I would say 29 cards, and then the 30th, think about what you want. I was thinking about 2 collateral damage, but the problem with collateral damage is this is a completely dead card against Spell Demon Hunter. So I'm not sure how it's going to transpire over the next week, but otherwise the deck is looking very good. Powerful throughout ladder, good ladder climber, underrated the top legend. Good. We'll see what happens with Face Hunter, because this is a deck that could have maybe a low skill cap or something like that. Maybe it drops off over time. I don't know. But I definitely, what I do want to know is what happens if this deck has a play rate that's above 1%, which is what where it was. It was under 1% hat at most ladder brackets for the reports.
Crazy. The deck is really good for that play rate. Really good for any play rate.
Yeah, so I would say I'd like to see Face Hunter reach, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5% play rate and see how it performs. Because, you know, as decks rise in play, usually they drop in their winner to some degree. I would like to see what that kind of drop would be. But, you know, you need to give it a chance. And the fact that Hunter is just not visible or was not visible, people thought this class was dead, right? And that kind of hurts diversity. But the fact that Hunter is actually competitive and quite good, Face Hunter looks good. Even Big Beast Hunter, if you run the hybrid build, looks like a fine deck. It's just unrefined. And if you gave it a chance, then you would see that Hunter does well. Maybe some players pick up Hunter and you start seeing different portraits, you know? You start experiencing. You see more Hunters, that means you see less Druids, maybe a little bit less Demon Hunters, and you start seeing different opponents, and that, I think, improves the mood or the perception when queuing into this format. Because generally, as I said in the past, diversity is a good thing. And if you see different opponents, you're less likely to be frustrated by a particular one. So yeah, Naga Face Hunter, good deck, very strong. And again, I'll keep looking for the 30th card. It's not Mr. Mukla. We'll see if it's Dragonbane. If it's not Dragonbane, could be something else. But the other 29 cards I'm pretty happy with. I really like 2 bananas and a Trinket Tracker. Some builds run barbed nets. I don't particularly like that, because if you run barbed nets, that means you're less likely to find bananas from Tracker. And bananas are... I think Bunch of Bananas is the best card in the deck.
It's really strong. Really, really strong.
It just gives the hunter ways to snowball in such a... It's not just efficient, it's also extremely flexible. Like, it allows you to fill your curve and just spend mana. And that's really good for an aggressive deck. You really want to spend your mana and doing meaningful things with every point of mana that you have. And Bunch of Bananas is fantastic for that purpose. Really good card. Barrel of Monkeys is also very good and very annoying for a lot of decks to deal with, because it protects your snowballing threats and it gives you the ability to go wide and chip, deal chip damage and win races against aggressive decks, because the barrels, the monkeys just soak so much damage. It's also really good with Cope of Quel'Thalas.
That card has gotten so many lethals for me out of nowhere, because it's just like, it hits for like 7. You just have to have some minions in play and the thing hits for a ton of damage.
Yeah, the thing, like, if you have any sort of board lead and you play Hope of Quel'Thalas, then your opponent kind of dies. It's mostly the main reason why I did not drop this card. Like, the card is not amazing. The reason why I kept it is because it's the best card in the Blood Control Death Knight matchup. And that matchup is normally tough, so I don't want to cut the best card in the toughest matchup for the deck, which is why it's still there. But yeah. Face Hunter, good. Good deck. Needs to see more play. So, the conclusion hat is that 10 classes are viable. Not the 10 you think. I think Warlock is actually the one that's not viable. And most classes have several viable strategies. Some of them are very reliant on one. Like Shaman is just Totem Shaman. And to some extent, Hunter is mostly face. Big Beast is kind of a poor imitation. But other classes are like Spooky Mage is the one thing that works in Mage. That is true. But other classes have multiple archetypes. Most of them are different from each other. All of them viable. I think there are 10 classes that have a deck with a positive win rate based on the last 48 hours. And the meta is not as bad as people thought it would be. At least until after the 24 hours, which is why I said what I said in the past, that people are overreacting. And I think the lesson is, don't overreact based on one day of data, one day of experience, one day of feeling.
I mean, part of the lesson that I've kept learning as well is that playing in high legend is not a diverse experience if you're grinding for a world's finish, that you're just not going to see that many decks because that's how high legend works.
I think that what happened is there was a patch. The patch came on towards the end of the month. There was no data report. There was no information other than the things that, you know, the established decks. So what people did, they just grinded to top finishes with the things that they knew and relied on. And those were very few decks. So people at high MMR kept queuing into the decks that were perceived to be the best. And they got frustrated because they kept queuing into the same opponents and they felt that the patch did nothing. When the fact of the matter is, people just picked what was safe and there was not a lot of information. So the experience for those content creators, a lot of them are content creators, was very narrow.
Unpleasant.
Yeah, and then they complained. But what ended up happening is that people just worked with less information. And now that we have more information, we realize that there are more diverse, the field is more diverse than people thought it would be. And there are a lot more options than what was previously presented. And the meta is actually fine. As I said, my personal opinion is that it's also data driven. I think Spell Demon Hunter is not the healthiest thing in the format. And that deck is a kind of a problem in terms of play experience, rather than strictly looking at power. But other than that, I'm fine with everything else. I think the meta is solid. And again, my concerns with Spell DH are being tempered a bit by the fact that I'm seeing Spooky Mage with the potential to beat it. I'm seeing Mech Paladin. I'm seeing Unholy Death Knight. In addition to the sustaining strategies of Blood Control and Zoctorid. So there are multiple ways to attack it. this gives me encouragement. So overall, the meta is fine, and Warrior is closer than people think it is. Honestly, Menagerie is giving me some encouragement over the last 48 hours. Control is two cards away. I think the class is going to be fine. Definitely by the time the miniset comes out, I believe that it will get what it needs. Or the balance patch. So things are looking up.
Yeah, there are... There's going to be... So from my projections, it's not official, I don't know anything, but from my projections, if I've done my math correctly, every four Tuesdays they do the big patch, and in between those they do the small patches. We know we're getting a big patch on the 9th. That's a BG's patch. Typically the BG's patches get balance the following Thursday or 2 weeks later, two Tuesdays later. But usually it's the following Thursday, and usually that comes with standard changes too. That would be Thursday the 18th. That's in 12 days from this podcast right now. 12 days from the time we're recording, probably 11 days from when we release it. So we might be less than 2 weeks from the next balance patch, and there are still developments going on in multiple classes right now. It might not be that day. It could be the 23rd or the 25th. Could be either of those days.
I actually think 23rd, but we'll see.
Yeah, it's around that range. It's in that ballpark.
Yeah, but the format is definitely decent enough, and there are new developments that are happening that indicate to me that there's no need for like emergency, and Team 5 can just take their time, look at the data, see what they can do to make things better. And I don't think you need drastic changes. I don't think you need to make hard nerfs to strategies. I think you can keep trying to lift some of the underperforming strategies up. And again, try to tone down some limiters at the top that feel terrible to play against. Maybe those, but other than that, I think the format is fine. It's looking like it's developing in a decent direction. Just Nook's info, Brand. That's pretty much what I'm saying at. Just yeah. Get rid of that. I think we'll be fine. But yeah, things are good. And that's kind of it.
Well, that's a show. So,
yeah.
Thank you so much, everyone, for listening, as usual. VS Gold, VS Silver, Patreon members, everyone who subbed and supported this week. Next report will be on Thursday, the 11th, as planned. And I guess this is me signing off. This is so weird, man. We started this show a few years back, almost 3 years exactly. It was the mid-lockdown COVID era. I'm really excited to be a listener because it's one of the most fun parts of my week, and the reason why my Friday mornings at work were so rough, because you would give me all the hot details on Thursday nights, and then I would go play Hearthstone because I had to play. Like, I have three deck lists queued up right now that I'm dying to play. A warrior, a rogue, whatever.
Don't worry. Look, I honestly, like, if you were just gone from Hearthstone, then I would be so much more devastated right now.
Yeah, I'm still going to be around. I'm going to be, like, your business contact for the creator program.
Yeah, like, that's cool. And, you know, like, I'm just one Discord DM from you. And I'll keep you updated.
But it's not the same as talking to you and you've been like, oh, look at this Nelly thing. And I'm like, I'm going to go play Nelly right now.
I mean, we can still have the Discord chats. Huh? It's not impossible to have Discord chats and Discord DMs, and I can send you tips on, playing decks. Maybe you'll get tips from the Team 5's data team, but I don't know. Whatever. Anyway, I can give you, we're still going to be in contact, both work-related contact, and also I'll give you deck list. Don't worry, Hat. I'll tell you the score.
Oh, I'm not worried. You're going to send me a you up message, and when you see aggro decks in the data, just hit me up with those deck codes.
Yeah, so the fact that you're still around makes me less devastated, but obviously I'm really sad about the fact that you're leaving. In the sense that we're not going to have these podcast recordings, which I really enjoy and I have a lot of fun with. But, you know, hopefully you'll have fun listening to this podcast. And who knows, maybe you'll show up at some point in this podcast from the other side of the content creation thing.
It's possible.
Yeah, I want to thank you for doing this podcast. This would not have been possible without you. You've been amazing co-host for me, and you've been a great friend, and Thank you for all that you've done for the community and in all the podcasts that you've been in. And this is a big loss for the community. But as I've said before, this is a huge gain for Team 5. And I believe that you'll do great.
Thank you very much, my friend. Yeah, likewise, everything you said, all those nice things, same right back to you. It's been really fun, and I look forward to supporting podcasts like this in my new position, but it'll be a little weird to hang up the mic. Really weird, let's be honest. But listener, if you're hearing this right now, thank you so much for everything over the years. Please keep tuning in. You're really going to like the new host. Really going to like it. They have a better accent than I do.
Don't give them hints, Hat. Don't give them hints. But yeah, we'll announce it on Twitter in the future, in the near future. Okay? I'm still keeping it a secret.
Yes. But what is public is our love for Evil Dave. Thank you so much for the podcast transcriptions. Steven Sensei for the intro and outro. And our love for you, listener. Thank you so much for tuning in. Please stay subscribed to this feed. More content is coming your way. More data, more numbers, more Zacko. And more from the new person you're going to want to tune in. Thank you so much, and they'll talk to you soon.
The Data Reaper podcast is an official production of Vicious Syndicate. Don't forget to sign up and contribute your game data to improve the quality of the weekly Data Reaper report. Instructions are available on our website, along with lots of other weekly content at vicioussyndicate.com. Thank you to all of our patrons and data contributors for proving there's strength in numbers.
But it's an elemental made of pee. It's pee. It's an elemental made of pee. It's pee. Then we have had. It's a pee element. We have a pee element.
Yeah.
It's a pee element. We have a pee element.
Yeah.
It's a P element. It's a P element. It's Pete.